confirmatory factor analysis differs from exploratory factor analysis in that in a confirmatory factor analysis, a researcher specifies the factors for the data instead of having the computer discover what are the underlying factors. So confirmatory factor analysis requires that you specify the expected result, and then computer will tell you if that result fits your data and will estimate the factor loadings for you. This is a more flexible approach to factor analysis than an exploratory analysis. In this video, I will demonstrate you on a conceptual level what confirmatory factor analysis does and how it can be applied to more or different kinds of scenarios. Our data has six indicators. We have indicators A1 through A3 that are supposed to measure construct A. So we can see that there is variation in these indicators due to construct A. And there is also some random noise, the E here, though that's unreliability of these indicators. And then we have some variance components that is reliable. So for example, if we measure A3 multiple times, there is a specific part of the A3 that is reliable, but it is specific to A3. So for example, if we ask whether a company is innovative or not, that measures innovativeness, it can also measure something else. So the only unreliability is not the only source of measurement there, but there's also some item uniqueness. And the idea of a confirmatory factor analysis is that we specify a factor model for this data ourselves. So for example, we would say that because these three indicators, A1 through A3, are supposed to measure construct A, we assign them to factor A. And then we assign these to factor B, and then each indicator also gets an error term. Then the factor analysis takes the variance of those indicators apart into variance that can be attributed to the factors and variance that can be attributed to the error terms, like so. So now we have a factor solution here. We have all variation that is due to the construct A goes to factor A, all variation that is due to construct B goes to factor B, and all these item uniqueness and unreliability goes to the error terms that are assumed to be uncorrelated. So these are uncorrelated distinct sources of variation for each indicator, and then we have the two common factors. So that's the ideal case. Sometimes your data are not as great as you would like, and confirmatory factor analysis allows you to model also problems in your measurement. So for example, if we have this kind of scenario, there is a variation again due to construct A, variation due to construct B, and then we have unreliability, the black circles here, and we have unique aspects of each indicator. But there is also some variation in A3 and B1 that correlates. It's the variance component R here. These letters are no particular meaning, by the way. They're just letters to distinguish these different circles. So A3 and B1 correlate for some other reason than measuring A and measuring B that could possibly be correlated. If we fit a confirmatory factor analysis model, then this variation that is shared by A3 and B1 actually goes to the factors. The reason why it goes to the factors is that these error terms are constrained to be uncorrelated. And what happens now is that our factors, which are supposed to present construct A and construct B, are contaminated by this secondary source of variation R that is present in A3 and B1. And as a consequence, the correlation between factors A and B will be overestimated and the results will be biased. And this is also the case in exploratory factor analysis. So if you have two factors that influence, or if we have this kind of like minor factor that influences A3 and B1, and we only get two factors, then the factor correlation between those two factors will be inflated. If we were to run an exploratory analysis, then the exploratory analysis could identify that there is a third factor that loads on A3 and B1, but because it's just two indicators, it's also possible that the exploratory analysis wouldn't identify that factor for us. So what can we do with this kind of situation? Confirmatory analysis allows us to also model correlated errors. So instead of specifying that these error terms of A3 and B1 are uncorrelated. We can say that it's possible that A3 and B1 correlate for some other reason. So we relax the constraint. We specify that these two can be correlated, and then the variation in A3 and B1 that is shared between these indicators, but not with others, so it's not part of the factors, then gets to escape to these error terms. And then we also again get clean estimate of the factor correlation A and B. But this is something that many people do. So your statistical software will tell you that the model doesn't fit the data perfectly, and it'll also tell you that you could freeze some correlations to make the model fit better. But that's a bit dangerous unless you know what you're doing. You should only add this kind of correlated errors if you have a good theoretical reason to do so. So the fact that your statistical software tells you to do is that you could do something to increase the model fit is not a reason to do something. It's an indication that you could do something and you should consider something. It's not a definite guideline that you should actually do that. So under which scenario then is it a good idea to allow the error terms of two indicators to correlate? For example, if our indicators would look like that. So we would have indicators about innovativeness. So A factor here is innovativeness, and B factor is productivity. So we would have questions about innovativeness and questions about productivity. Then we realize that, okay, so A3 is our personal is innovative, and B1 is our personal is productive. So both of these actually have this personnel dimension as well. So they don't measure only innovativeness and productivity. They also measure how high quality the personnel in the company are. So then we realize that, okay, so there's a secondary dimension that these two indicators measure, and then we can add the error correlation here. But it also, you have to justify it. So it's not enough that you say that our statistical software tells us that the model fits better if we do something. You have to justify it also in non-statistical terms. This is the same thing like with the outliers. You don't delete an observation because it is different. You have to explain why it's different in non-statistical terms. The same thing when you eliminate indicators from a scale. So your statistical software will tell you that sometimes eliminating an item from a scale will make Chromebox alpha to go up, but that's not a reason to eliminate an item. You should also look at non-statistical criteria. So what does the item look like? Is there a good reason why we think it's less reliable? Because these kind of suggestions by your software, they could also be just a random correlation between two random elements. So random correlation between this is, and then you would be misspecifying the model. Another way, perhaps a bit better way to accomplish the same is to specify this secondary factor. So we could, instead saying that these two error terms are correlated, we could say that these indicators A3 and B1 actually also measure something else. So we add this secondary factor here. And this is a bit more appealing approach, because then it makes you, you have to explicitly then interpret what this factor means. And it's a lot easier to free correlations without explaining what they are actually, what's the interpretation of these two of the correlation between these error terms. It's a lot easier to do that without an explanation than adding a factor. So if you had to add a factor, then your reviewers will ask you to explain it, and you always should. So it's a good idea to have the factor instead of having the correlation. Mathematically, both of these accomplish the exact same thing. They allow the unique aspect of A3 and B1 that is correlated to escape from the error terms. This example of adding minor factor can be extended to also another scenario. So that's just the same indicators again. We can have this kind of scenario. So what's the scenario here? We have indicators A1 through A3 measure A, indicators B1 to B3 measure B. There's unreliability, the ease, and then there is some variation that is shared by all the indicators. That variation could be, for example, variation due to the measurement method. So this is a scenario where you would have common method variance. So the R would be here, the variation due to the method or the common method variance. And then if we estimate a factor model with A1, A2, and A3 loading on A, and these B indicators loading on B, then all variation due to the method escapes to this B factor and A factor, and the factor correlation will be overestimated greatly. So in this kind of scenario, it is possible to also specify a secondary factor. So we can specify this method factor here. And the idea is that all the indicators load on the factors that they're supposed to measure, the factors representing the constructs, and a factor representing the measurement process. So looks really good and looks good, too good to be true. But this is not the panacea for method variance problems. This kind of model is problematic to estimate. The reason for that is that a high correlation between A and B is nearly indistinguishable from A1, A2, A3, B1, B2, B3 just being caused by one factor. So they are empirically nearly impossible to distinguish. So this kind of model is very unstable to estimate. In practice, these models have been shown to be problematic even in with simulated data sets. But there's one way that this kind of model can work, and it's if you add these marker indicators. So sometimes you see in published papers that they use marker indicators. The idea of marker indicators is that you have indicators that are unrelated with the factors that you're modeling. So A1 and B are unrelated to these M1 and M2. For example, if you use innovativeness and productivity, and then you have questions on 1 to 7 scale, you could have a marker indicator of whether the person likes jazz music or not. I've actually seen that being used. The idea is that how much you like jazz music is completely unrelated with the innovativeness and productivity of your company. But if the jazz music indicator correlates with these indicators, then we can assume that that correlation is purely due to the measurement method, because jazz music liking and innovation really are two completely different things.